step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. We've got a loaded show, lots of things to get into. We'll have Richard Deitch in about 15 minutes. Always good conversations with him. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Elijah Campbell at our Hillside Medical Game Studios as we inch a little bit closer to Wild Card Weekend, and we'll have a little preview. By the way, we're going to go to Indy at 11 o'clock and talk to our man Bob Kravitz. Chris Ballard certainly grabbing a lot of attention yesterday around the Colts organization and his comments about Carson Wentz. So we'll get the fallout from Indy in the second hour of the program. Last night, Predators finally dropped one after being undefeated in 2022. They lose to Buffalo last night 4-1, so Buffalo's first win in the calendar year. Nashville's first loss in the calendar year, and so they'll have to pick themselves up, dust themselves off, if I can talk, which is kind of a problem. We got four more hours to go, and head to Boston today, and they will take on the Bruins for a little matinee hockey yesterday. One of those typical games through the course of an 82-game season that I was bringing it up in pregame, like, you know, they're human beings. They're not robots, and You can get told over and over and over again, don't look past this team. But they can look in the standings and see this team is not very good. And it's just hard. It's hard to duplicate what took place on Tuesday night. That was a playoff-like atmosphere, playoff-like game. And then you got to turn around in a short amount of time and try to get that same type of energy up for a bad team. And it didn't happen last night.
Yeah, it was a head-scratcher. But I agree. I think that's the perspective. You know, I'll take having a team on a roll for the better part of a month, month and a half, and have one stinker. And as you guys aptly pointed out after the game, you and Hal, you know, the important thing is, where does it go from here? Does this set you going in a bad direction for a while? Or is this a one-off and you can bounce back and get back to doing the things you do well? There were some freaky plays last night. To a person, you know, from the coach on down to all the players that spoke after the game, none of them used it as an excuse, but there were some weird things that happened. You know, there's the first goal of the game. There's a shot from the point. It's a good shot, good tip. UC Saros makes a great save like he has so often in the last, you know, really the entire season. Matt Benning goes to clear the rebound and it clips the back of UC Saros' skate and goes into the net. So they put it in their own net. You know, a decisive goal that happened in the game. Roman Josi collides with Phil Myers in the neutral zone and creates a breakaway for Jeff Skinner, of all people, who seems to own the Predators. He's had a great career of scoring goals, but particularly against Nashville, he's just one of those guys that always seems to do well when he plays against the Predators. And then they had a goal waved off for offside challenge, which, you know, it was the right call. But it was just one of those nights where every time it seemed like something good was about to happen, something crazy would happen. But they put it on themselves. They said, you know, we weren't the better team. Buffalo beat us. And so now the question is, can you bounce back and do what good teams do, shake those types of games off and get back to it?
Pasternak had a hat trick last night. Marchand had been on a heater before that. So two of their big scoring punches right now playing really, really well. So they'll have to deal with that tomorrow afternoon in Boston.
They got Tuukka Rask now signed. They're a team that needs to play well to make the playoffs because they haven't played as many games, but it's a very crowded division with some great teams. So Boston is in a state of urgency, but they're playing some good hockey right now. This will be a tough test. And, of course, they've already beaten the Predators once this year.
after we got off the air yesterday, I don't know what your all's reaction was. Mine was, wow. Okay. I that's unbelievable, but they've turned into, for whatever reason, a really bad franchise, so I guess we shouldn't be surprised. But there was yet again another firing in the NFL, and it was David Culley getting shown the door yesterday after we were off the airwaves yesterday afternoon. And Texans won 4 games, a team that we talked about all the way to the end that was still playing for their coach. They're a bad football team. GM Bill O'Brien and the powers that be up top, they've been running this thing into the ground, and the Texans aren't very good, and I think they overachieved, as crazy as that sounds, overachieved with the season that they had. But yet, David Culley's shown the door. I'm not going to feel sorry for him. I'm not going to give him a shoulder to cry on because he got paid $22 million to go away. And I strive for that day. I look for that day. I'll throw a big party. But the day somebody throws me $22 million to go away, I'll be happily, I'll have a big smile on my face, and I'll go away. I do feel bad for him in all seriousness because, you know, he didn't get a fair shake. It's not, nobody was turning that team around this past season, and it looks like he was just kind of a little Band-Aid to whatever they're, you know, whatever they have in mind. Who knows what the Texans have in mind for the future?
I mean, do they know? Like, do they know what they're doing at all?
You have to wonder.
I mean, I was surprised by it. You know, when that news came out, I was like, man, I thought he had survived this. But I guess, you know, Nick Cesario wants to get his guy, which is probably going to have Patriots connections. And I do wonder if Brian Flores being out there now, if that's the play, if they end up going that way. But you got to figure there's going to be some connection to the family, to the Patriot family. But, you know, David Culley did – basically the best job you could ask him to do with what he was handed. So
I tend to agree with
weird
that
situation.
From afar, I'm not down there every week. You know, I think up here, there's a lot of people with his ties. You know, he played collegiately at Vanderbilt. He coached at a lot of the programs around our area here. He's from Cookeville. So you want to see him have a chance to succeed, you know, and it just looked to me like you guys said that, you know, he had them playing really hard at the end of the season when they had nothing to play for, and they had one hand tied behind their back the entire season with the whole Watson thing. That was brutal to throw anybody into. So that surprised me. Now, on the other hand, I did see some things. You know, when we had Sean Salisbury on and we had Clint Sterner on a few times, the people that watched them every week, they did see some things that they didn't feel like maybe he managed the game as well as he could have at times with clock management, timeouts and challenges and things like that. But, you know, first year head coaches, you probably feel like you're going to have a little bit of a learning curve on that. And you're going to get better at those things the more you coach. So I feel bad for him. I you know, he's a career lifer coach. You figure somebody will snap him up and he'll be on a staff somewhere. But that's a bummer to wait so long to get one chance to coach in the NFL. And you feel like you did about as well as you could under the circumstances, and you get canned after one season. That's pretty brutal. Because I don't know if he'll get another chance.
Yeah, probably not.
No, I mean, I think it was a surprise that he got the first chance.
Yeah, yeah, it was a little bit of an upset that he got the job anyway. But, geez, 1 year, man.
Yeah, but tough. I mean, you know, I think there are some guys like that. Like, I look at a David Culley, you know, Vic Fangio, that have been these career assistants and have been around for a long time that, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, I got a shot at it. Didn't go well. But, you know, you never lose the former head coach tag. So at least you had that going for you.
And you get paid.
Yeah, $22 million.
Now David Culley's set. I mean, he's good. So at least he got paid.
How many years were left on his contract?
Like 4.
Really?
Yeah.
He got signed to that long of a deal?
Yep.
Initially?
It's the Texans, man. I mean, honestly, this
well,
is why
I just
talk
I didn't
so
realize
much.
That they had signed him up to that big of a commitment under the circumstances, but good for him.
Why do you think we talk about this Titans window so much? I mean, they're in a really bad division. They should take advantage of being in a really bad division. The Texans are a mess. It's going to take them a while to get back. It's the Jags are the Jags. I mean, you've got two teams that are just basically out of the mix every year. Maybe they rise up, you know, once in a blue moon and have a good year, and then they go back to, you know, being who they are. Now, the Texans have had a good run when Bill O'Brien was the coach. Then when he got the power and the GM, it's well documented. We've talked about it enough. And then that you just wreck that thing, and it's not going to get back. I mean, you don't lose DeAndre Hopkins, Deshaun Watson. I mean, we don't need to go down the list, right? All these guys. I mean, Zach Cunningham's here. All these guys that they were their they identify as their core players, they're all gone. I mean, what do you expect? What do you expect? So it's you're not going to flip that switch overnight. I mean, I don't know what they haven't done. People seem to be really high on Davis Mills. I mean, he's all right. I don't know. I haven't seen enough for me to go, holy cow, who needs Deshaun Watson when you got Davis Mills?
I think he's maybe better than people thought.
I heard Rex Ryan say he would take Davis Mills over Baker Mayfield, and I'm like, really? Really, Rex?
Well, I mean, think of the source.
That's a little extreme today. I mean, maybe he ends up being right, but like, really, you've seen enough of Davis Mills, and you know right now that Baker, you know, that's where you put Baker Mayfield below Mills? Really? I mean, I know people are questioning Baker Mayfield. I get it. I'm questioning Baker Mayfield on what he is, but he's below Mills? Really? So, I mean, the Jags and the Texans
I do think you got to give Mills some credit. There are some quarterbacks who get a chance to play like Mills did unexpectedly and completely flop and show that, you know what, hey, we got to find somebody else. But Mills at least has done enough to say, hey, okay, not bad. Now, what is he? We don't know, but he might be something. Better than
maybe.
You know what they were saying during the broadcast? Had he stayed in school another year, he would have maybe been drafted a lot higher if everything went according to plan. He just, you know, he came out a year before he needed to and was not really on the radar because last year's class was so crowded with quarterbacks. So that is part of it, right? Is when, you know, what are the circumstances when you're in the draft? So, I mean, I think he's pretty good. Of course, you know, he's not like he lit it up in college and he was a big household name like A.J. McCarron or Jake Fromm or, you know, one of those guys that you see all the time playing in college. So, we hear the name Davis Mills, like, who's Davis Mills? Where, what, you know, what's his story? You know, how often did you see him play in college? But, like, we never heard of Kurt Warner. Or, you know, there's plenty of stories of quarterbacks that you never heard of that turn out to be really good pros. So, he'll be an interesting one to follow. It's a great question. It could turn out to be Matt Flynn, for all we know.
Or Scott Mitchell.
Sure. Right? They can go any number of paths. That's the great mystery of quarterbacks. But you know what? He's something. It's like a Billy Volek, right? We're like, hey, this guy looks pretty good in the preseason games. I wonder what would happen if he ever went into a game.
You could be one of those
like,
guys.
Wow, hey, Billy Volek threw for 400 yards.
Well, I'm not calling him a bum. I'm just saying that's a little strong to say he's
right. It's just
than
to say
the
you
guy
can't
who was
know
the number
the
one pick overall in the draft and just won a playoff game last year. Like, really? He's better than him already? Like, I think I need to see a little bit more. I mean, maybe he is, but I think I'm not there yet. I need to see a little bit more. I think he was okay. I mean, he certainly wasn't embarrassing. He certainly wasn't a guy that you went and said, what a joke. But, you know, to already be putting him in front of the number one pick in the draft, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
Yeah,
I don't think you've seen enough.
And won a playoff
game. That sounds like
a
provocative,
like, okay.
Provocative TV statement that, you know, gets people talking, but not sure if that's true.
We'll come back. Richard Deitch, we'll get into a lot of things like we always do. With him next here on Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry as we wave hello to you and good morning. Back here on Darren Donica Chase, our show is presented by Croatian CBD products, curated for life. No stranger to the show. Love having him on. Always a great conversation. Richard Deitch. From The Athletic now joins us. Richard, good morning. How we doing?
Good morning to you guys.
I want to start with a place you're very familiar with, the state of New York. I remember for years and years, Dana White of the UFC going absolutely nuts on social media, on any platform he could get a hold of, and pulling his hair out. Well, he is bald. I was going to say, I'm surprised he doesn't have any hair. He doesn't have any hair. Trying to get the state of New York sanctioned in the United States for mixed martial arts. It was literally the last state in the U.S. to be sanctioned, and he would just blow them up talking about how rotten their politics are and the stupidity dealing with their politicians and blah, 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 blah. With that being said, now, you know, we've had sports gambling here in the state of Tennessee for a little bit over a year now, November 1st of last year or the previous year. So a little bit over a year. I thought New York would be literally the last state again to get sports gambling, yet they're up live and running. What, a week now? They've been up and running for about a week. Are you surprised as much as I am? You know the lay of the land better than me.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like, you know, don't be listening to out-of-towners about New York. It's not all people, like, walking in the streets, eating organic food and putting their fist up saying, please give us socialism. I mean, like, relax, everyone. Like, every place is not what you think your stereotype is, in the same way any New Yorker has a stereotype of Tennessee is talking out of their, you know what. All right, so the one thing, no, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, at the end of the day, when it comes to sports gambling, there's so much money to be had by state municipalities, local municipalities, that all these politicians, I would think of, you know, unless you are really, and I would respect this decision if you believe this, unless you're really beholden to the idea that gambling is really an ill of society and will cause addictions and some other really, really bad things, I think most politicians will greenlight this because there's just so much money to be had for their state. And, you know, you can, and then in theory, I guess, take that money and hopefully put it to things that are important, infrastructure, schools, et cetera. So, no. One, I'm not surprised at that. And here's the second thing you should just know about New York as a general rule. It's almost like multiple different states in a way. Like New York City is its own sort of unique world with very unique political characteristics. If you go to Long Island, which is essentially 15 miles away, incredibly different. If New York is very much like a Democratic stronghold, Long Island historically was a GOP stronghold. You start going up the state, the middle of the state, like Syracuse and stuff like that, very mixed politically. Some places heavy Democrat, some places heavy GOP. Go to Western New York, where Buffalo is located, very, very more conservative in GOP. Western New York is almost like Ohio, and I can certainly speak from experience in that because I lived in Buffalo for 6 years, in addition to living in New York for 20. So it's an interesting state. It's just not, I think people, when they think of New York, they think of New York City, and I understand that. It's such a big and important city. But the state itself is really, really not uniform at all. So, no, that doesn't surprise me. I figured New York would eventually get sports gambling. And my sense is, again, I haven't looked at this. You guys might have looked at it before me. My sense is it'll be very, very profitable for the sports books. I mean, just do the numbers. Do the math on it. There's just so many people in New York that I don't know how that can't be successful for whoever's in that business.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty safe play. We're crushing it in this state, and we're little old Tennessee. I think they'll crush it in New York. I think
they'll
make a lot of money. Speaking of New York, I just happened to be watching live. I think it was yesterday or the day before. Typically, I'm listening to our fantastic morning show, but I just happened to be watching Get Up, and I heard Bart Scott say this, and I was like, what in the hell just happened? Like, I was looking around going, did anybody else hear that? He just referenced that Josh Allen should take Viagra because it's going to be 0 degrees for their game Saturday night. And of course, Diana Rossini is talking, and he keeps saying it. And I'm like, how uncomfortable she must be as he keeps saying it over and over again. I mean, I know it's Bart Scott. I get it. He's a GIF. I get it. But why is he saying that on Get Up?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. If you can drop erection jokes in the middle of a morning show, I mean, you're really looking at a second contract. I mean, listen, what you know this, like we've all everybody who's talking right now on this line has been on live radio or live television throughout their career. And sometimes, like, your brain gets ahead of you, or sometimes you think you're saying something that's clever and you want to repeat it or you want to keep making the point. And I do think sometimes people forget that, like, you know, especially if you're like an ESPNer, man, you're talking to millions of people when you drop something. It's not just talking to your buddies like down the street. Like, this is live on air. So in Bart Scott's case, first of all, it seems clear that he wanted to say and he thought he was making a funny joke. And, you know, I actually thought, a lot of this stuff never bothered, like, doesn't really bother me. Like, I kind of like crash television, for lack of a better word. I like when things sort of go haywire because it's just, like, interesting to me. So that doesn't bother me, but I will, to be serious for a moment, and this is the reality, and you guys know this too, like, he does work for Disney, and there are companies like Disney that really obviously want you to be careful when it comes to sex, when it comes to politics, when it comes to issues like that, because they know that they have a lot of people of different ages watching. They don't want their sponsors or advertisers to get mad. So that's sort of, you know, and by the way, not that Bart Scott did any of this and it'll be forgotten in a day, but my sense is just, one, he's going for a joke. You know, he kind of thinks he's funny or controversial sometimes, and he sort of just repeats it. I agree with you. Like, if you're the host in that situation, Diana Rossini was the host, right? Like, you don't want to sell your guy out. At the same time, though, like what do? You know what I mean? Like, you got to get the show back on what you're supposed to do, and, like, it's not a good situation. It's, again, it's like, this is not the equivalent of it, but if some, like, if you're a play-by-play host and your color analyst just says something that's just, like, really out of bounds, like, horrifically bad, like, do you then acknowledge what the color person said, or do you just go on? Because either way, you're screwed, right? If you just go on and pretend it didn't happen, people are going to kill you because you didn't acknowledge it. If you then acknowledge it, you're really heading into a place where you're either going to bury the person next to you, or you're going to have management talk to you. So there's just no, in her situation, she had no good options. There's never a good option when that happens.
Yeah, look, let me just say this, full disclosure, I wasn't offended by it. I just was, you know, we have a camera on us for the show now. That's the thing to do in radio. And if I had a camera on me when I was watching it, I was just looking around the room going, is anybody else hearing this? Is he keeps saying Viagra. I think I was shocked. Like, why does he keep saying Viagra? Josh Allen should take Viagra before the game. So anyway.
Here's the one thing, and this would be interesting for your listeners. The one thing I learned when I did radio for nearly 4 years live in Toronto was, like, just, like, how dangerous a live mic can be. And so sometimes, like, you know, during a break, you may hit, like, live by accident, you know, as you're talking. You say the wrong thing there, your career is over, right? Sometimes, like, if you don't realize, like your engineer or something like that, you're still live as you're heading to a commercial. You know, you sort of learn these things instinctively. Like, you don't curse. You don't sort of say anything. You're really careful. And the other day, I don't know if you guys saw this, I saw in Australia that there were news anchors who did a report on Novak Djokovic, pretty straight report, just basically saying, you know, at the moment he's in deportation, he's not allowed in the country. And they had 90 seconds of what they thought was a dead air, and they just went off on the guy, cursing, ripping him. So I always think to myself, like, imagine being in that situation where, like, you know, you do this report, you sort of do it straight, and then somehow to the rest of, you know, to all your audience, it's like 90 seconds of, like, curse-laden, this guy's, like, the worst, he should be out of our country, how dare him. So live mics are scary, for sure.
Chase, is Richard nailing something? Does that hit home? Can we relate? Willie, I don't know your setup with you guys at television, but on the radio side, I mean – we're broadcasting in a big, huge room full of people, so yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always looking at Chase or Ladarius and going, mic's off, right? We're down, right?
Right.
We're having this conversation. We're down, right? Like, they can't hear us out there.
And I tell them, you'll know if it's not. When you see a bunch of heads turn around and look at you, go, what did he just say?
By the way, this is the reason why you should always be nice to your producers, have a great producer, let your producer know how much he or she is appreciated, because there are times they can save your bacon. And there was a time about 2 years ago where I didn't realize we were off the air, and I blasted. I triple F-bomb, and I got saved because my producer dumped that before that went live on the air. So you have a good producer, so they can save your bacon for sure.
Nice. Thanks, Elijah.
Good tip. A triple F-bomb. Nice. Boy, you
nice.
Must, yeah.
Back, yeah, you yeah, really
it was,
into
it. It was the Russell Westbrook of cursing, basically. I triple-doubled that.
Nice.
So, Richard, this is maybe not too far, too bad of a segue here, but you had a great podcast with a good panel about how the NHL is covered. You did a similar one with baseball. It's really good stuff. There's a lot of common things no matter what sport you're talking about here. But I'm curious, along those lines, your thoughts of how TNT is going about it. They're really trying to be unique. You can see what they're shooting for, something similar to what they have for the NBA, which is, that's reaching for the stars there. That's hard to do. But to me, the interesting guy is Paul Bissonnette. If you've ever listened to his podcast, he certainly gets out there, and he's had to rein it in a little bit, but they're also bringing him on for that reason, to try to get things going, something unique. How do you think it's going so far?
I think it's going well, and you're right. Like, Bissonnette cannot be the same on Spitting Chicklets as he is on TNT. I mean, just the rules are different for, one podcast where cursing and all that other stuff's allowed, and different for if you're on TNT. But I like what they've done. One, I like their game presentation. I actually just think they're, graphically and just how they shoot hockey has been pretty good. And so it seems like they've really they've invested money and talent. And so, like, I just think the look of the game is pretty good. And then I think the studio show's good. Like, I have to be honest, I had kind of low expectations for that studio show, because as much as I obviously admire Gretzky and his career, he never really came off as, like, that interesting a voice to me. But I feel like they've used him in a pretty smart manner. After that first show, which was really, like, just paying homage to Gretzky, was a little too much over the top, they've sort of found, like, a rhythm where, like, Gretzky can weigh in on certain things, but he doesn't have to dominate the studio show, the conversations. I really like Anson Carter. I think he's a really bright guy and interesting. I think Tockett's been pretty good when I've seen him on there. And, yeah, Bissonnette is sort of the X factor, and every show needs that. I mean, the thing with a guy like Bissonnette is you can't tell him or, like, push him to try to be the Barkley of hockey. Like, just sort of let him be whoever he is, and, like, the personality should come out if you, if you sort of just produce the show, right? And then Liam McHugh is, like Kurt Menefee or, James Brown. I don't think anybody's Ernie Johnson. He's just at a different level. But he's a professional enough to understand that, like, the star of the show is not him, right? His job is to sort of get his people around him to talk, try to facilitate conversations as best possible, and then get him to break. Like, he's, no offense to Liam McHugh, but we're not tuning in for Liam McHugh. That's just the reality of it. And I think he understands that. I think he does a really good job on that. So I think they've done well. Viewership's okay. They haven't revolutionized viewership or anything like that. And it's hockey. At the end of the day, it's a regional sport. I mean, it's just, other than the Winter Classic, like, you're never getting close to a million for a regular season game. It's just the reality of the sport. But I think they've done a good job. Like, and I think ESPN has too. I mean, I think at this point, as a viewer and as a hockey fan, I just want them to be professional. Like, I don't want them to yuck up the sport and sort of not treat it the same way they treat, like, the NFL and stuff. And so far, I feel like they've done it. They've done a good job, both of them.
Yeah, I think a good crew, and certainly the NBA has this with Barkley and Kenny Smith and those guys, you feel like you want to be around for halftime to see what they're saying. And I don't think I've ever seen with NBC, and I'm not there yet for ESPN, but I'm feeling like I want to see what the guys have to say in the intermission for TNT more so. Like, when I'm in Canada, if I'm on the road, I want to see if Elliot Friedman's in there. I want to see the Pierre LeBruns. That's good stuff. Like, I want to hear Bob McKenzie, because I might hear some nuggets that I can take with me and say, whoa, this was some interesting stuff to discuss. I didn't really feel like that with the NBC guys, but I think TNT could get there.
Well, here's my issue with with NBC. I found, like, Mike Milbury to be incredibly unappealing and just he was sort of grumpy, and, like, I can.
Sort of grumpy?
Very.
That's got to be, like, the nicest thing you've ever said, Richard. Sort of grumpy?
That's true. I tell you, I shouldn't say sort of. So here's the thing. If you're going to be a curmudgeon, and if you're going to sort of be old school, right, like back in my day, this is how we did it, blah, 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 you have to be, to me, like, funny and self-deprecating in some ways, right? That's, like, the only way I feel like that works. If you're, like, if you can make fun of yourself, like, amid sort of saying, like, these guys today don't do X, well, then I could sort of live with that. Like, that to me could theoretically be interesting TV. But Milbury was much more like kind of like waving his finger, like a little, like, almost like a bit of almost like a dean at a college. sort of like, well, this is the only way you can do it. How dare you question me, Mike Milbury, in my way? And not to mention then he just got himself in trouble with just some really stupid, like, anachronistic comments where he should have been run, to be honest. But yeah, I'm with you. That NBC show, for as good as NBC did hockey, and they definitely cared about hockey, they never figured out that studio show. They never had destination television, not once. But this is hard. I mean, listen, look how long ESPN has tried to find the destination group for Countdown. It's like literally it feels like 20 years at this point, you know.
Yeah.
From Mike Tirico, you know, back in the day, like sort of doing that show, to Dan Patrick, to now Mike Greenberg and Stephen A. Smith and Mike Wilbon. So, like, it's not easy to find a group. And I think what it does is it really, like, reinforces just how incredible Inside the NBA is as a group, how phenomenal the Premier League Live group is with Rebecca Lowe. And even though I think these guys are just a little too, like, kind of like, you know, like, comics at the disco kind of stuff, I tip my hat to Fox NFL Sunday, because whether you think Bradshaw and Long and Johnson and Michael Strahan, whether you think they're giving you interesting information, which they may not be, people like hanging out with that group. Like, that's an empirical fact. There's a reason they're the number one pregame show for NFL every year. And it's just a hard thing. It is a hard thing to find chemistry, and if you got it, that's the reason why these TV places, they keep these people for years and years and years and years, because they know how hard it is to find.
Good point. Speaking of that, you've got a Monday night NFL playoff game. What can we expect from that? What kind of ratings do you think for ESPN? This seems like a great opportunity for them.
Well, I'm sure in the Nashville area, the Manning cast will be 70 share or whatever. I mean, right?
That's part of the equation, right? I know you got a couple of fans on it on this panel. I usually watch the regular broadcasts. I've watched them a little bit. Darren and Chase are huge fans of the Manning cast.
By the way, let me just get this in before, because who knows when I'll be on your station again. But shout out to the University of Tennessee women's basketball program and Kelly Harper, who has now brought you guys back into the top 10. I love when Tennessee is great.
Well, I'm a little down on that, Richard, because they beat my Commodores last night. But that's all right. I think Shea Ralph will get them going there. But
I love Shea Ralph too, by the way. She's a great coach, and you'll be fine there. But like, it's great when Tennessee's good. So let me. And I am a homer, because I did get to spend a day with Pat Summitt, where she did make me a grilled cheese sandwich. One of my great accomplishments in sports journalism.
Hey,
so all right. So shout out to the University of Tennessee. To get back to Monday night. Listen, great for ESPN. You know, they basically have a showcase game, right? They're not competing against anybody. So that's, and the game's not terrible, which usually, if you remember back in the day, ESPN used to get the worst of the lot if they ever got a playoff game. So I think it's good. I think most people will obviously watch the main broadcast. Manning broadcast should probably get a little bit more than its average 1.7 million. But I think it's great for ESPN. I mean, this new contract coming up, really kicks in next year. You know, the ESPN's now in the Super Bowl rotation, so ABC will get a Super Bowl, and this is what ESPN has been going for such a long time. So that network is just very happy with where they are in the NFL, and you know, if you're a fan, this is one thing ESPN will do with all this stuff, is they will overcover the hell out of what they're covering, and so expect a lot of programming on this game Sunday night, Monday morning, Monday afternoon, leading up to the game.
Chase?
We're talking to Richard Deitch, The Athletic, here with us, the media circus. So speaking of the NFL, I mean, I was going to ask you about the Nickelodeon game. I think these things are so cool that they've added these now. Like, even though they're, I guess, geared towards kids, I find myself tuning in and checking it out. And obviously Nate Burleson has been a part of that with, you know, in the past. But how cool is it that they've added this Nickelodeon game once again?
I think it's I mean, listen, what the animators and what they're doing with that game is incredible. I mean, just the fact that they've, you know, they're able to in real time essentially, like, you know, create like the slime cannons for touchdowns and like all the, like, there's going to be a blimp that drops like slime onto the field. I mean, it's, having written about it, it really is like amazing just how many smart people are involved in putting on this production. I talked to the director of the game, and just the amount of decisions that she has to make between the cameras and stuff, it's like really complicated and intense. And you just gotta tip your hat to
the really talented people who are part of that. So it'll be totally fun. Last year that game drew 2 million viewers, I think, if I remember right. And that was the most, I think there's the most watched program in Nickelodeon in the last 5 years. So obviously Nickelodeon's excited. And here's the important thing. And again, this would be one of those things where you either think this is great or you think this is the end of the world. The NFL, obviously, their dream is to create fans early, right? Because
right.
we see this all the time. You get a fan at 8 or if you get a fan at 5 or 10, like that's probably a fan for life. So think of how much money that fan is going to put towards the product of the league, you know, over the course of his or her life. So the question is, you know, should, you know, the larger question is like, is it good for kids to be exposed to professional, you know, tackle football at such a young age? And isn't Nickelodeon essentially like providing the crack for it? Again, yeah, I mean, there's an argument to be made that, and I get that, but I also live in the real world, and like 10-year-olds are going to be exposed to the NFL. Like if you live in an NFL city, like it exists. So to me, like this is just a fun way for them to at least enjoy or watch a game with their family. So I tend to side on that end where it's like, it's a cool thing. It's fun. It's interesting. It's a way to get like parents and kids watching a sporting event together, and it will be successful. The one thing that if you're CBS and the NFL and Nickelodeon is, and this is what I know they keep thinking about this, is like, do we try to expand it? You know, we can't do it weekly because it's just too labor intensive, but do we maybe try to do 4 games next year? Or do we maybe try to do 2 playoff games? So those will be the next questions, but this will be massively successful. Not to mention the fact it's Cowboys 49ers. I mean, that's a viewership monster because of the Cowboys. And so it'll be a big, massive success whenever those viewership numbers come out next week.
Real quick, as these guys know, I've been obsessed with The Man in the Arena with Tom Brady on ESPN Plus and binging through that. And he's, you know, he's always been pretty private, especially with his family life and things like that. Why do you think now, you know, even though he's showing no signs of stopping, that he would take that deeper look into his life and his career?
Well, because he's 830 years old. I mean, at a certain point, he wants to look back on his life. I think Brady knows that the end is obviously closer than the beginning. I never would discount Tom Brady and to say any of the fools who said he's fallen off a cliff or he's losing it, like Max Kellerman, that, you know, they've had it handed to him like for 4 years now. So I wouldn't say that, but I just think, you know, he's in his 40s. He's at a reflective place in his life. I think he is a very smart guy in the sense that I think he wants to set up what he's going to do after football, which at least one part of this is going to be production, film production of some sort to me, sports documentary, sports production company. And I think this is a really good test case for his production interests, because there'll be no more interesting person that he'll probably ever do than himself. And so that's where I think he did it. I will say this. I think the quality of it is good, but it's very controlled. Like,
oh,
it's
no
not,
doubt.
You know, it's not the unvarnished. By the way, in the same way Last Dance was a little bit too with Jordan, except when you got away from Jordan. So that would be my only, I don't even want to call it a complaint. That would sort of be my, I just hope viewers, when they're watching the Brady thing, which is definitely interesting, I agree with you, you're getting basically a PR version of the Brady experience. I'm not saying he's lying, you know what I mean? But no one is going to investigate the more controversial aspects or show you a point of view that's sort of not Brady-centric. And so that's the only thing I would say as a viewer. But otherwise, listen, it's great. I mean, to get into the mind of arguably the greatest NFL player ever, that's pretty cool, and trust me, ESPN was beyond psyched that they could put that on.
Richard, let me just say this. For anybody who ever had any dealings with Pat Summitt, everybody feels the same way. I mean, Pat Summitt used to come on the show all the time, and honestly, I don't think we've had Lady Vols coach on since her. I mean, she was so welcoming and just great to talk to, as you know. I mean, that's the way – the way you described and what you said about Pat Summitt is basically anybody who's ever come in contact, that ever came into contact with Pat Summitt. I mean, she left a lasting impression on you.
The one thing about Pat Summitt that I will, obviously her career statistics like speak for themselves. It's not even worth, you don't even need to talk about it. I mean, she's either the greatest or second or third greatest coach of all time in women's basketball. She did things like for women's basketball, like at a time when like nobody was really covering women's basketball, that was not necessarily about promoting Tennessee, but about promoting the game. Whether it be traveling to other schools to play them, whether it be going on radio stations to just promote the sport, that had nothing to do with building her program up. I think she liked being Pat Summitt. Don't get me wrong. She had a big ego, and I think it bothered her that UConn eventually passed Tennessee. But she always cared about the game. So she was awesome. I mean, I don't think I could have ever played for her. I think she was just too intense and too exacting and perfection. But I consider myself so fortunate that I was able to interview as many times as I did. And again, for Sports Illustrated for Women, I think it was 2001. It was really the beginning of my career. I got to spend an entire day with her where we, with a local photographer, we went to her house at 6 a.m., spent the whole day with her. It was a game day. Got to sit inside halftime to watch her speak to her team, and then we eventually drove home with her. It was incredible. Just to be able to spend 16 straight hours with Pat Summitt, man, I can't believe how lucky I got early on. It was amazing.
That is awesome. Hey, great stuff as always. Appreciate you doing this. Have a great rest of your day and a good weekend. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. No triple F-bombs for you guys.
Richard Deitch from the
Lesson
Athletic.
Learned.
He must have been really mad. Maybe it was about Milbury.
Yeah.
You know? Got that. Who knows?
He can bring it
I
out
felt
of you,
like,
Milbury.
I felt like Milbury got me close to that at times. That's for sure. Good thing we don't have
that's
that
fair.
Problem anymore. Willie, tell everybody about QC Kinetics.
All right. QC Kinetics. QC Kinetics, of course, is in our listening area. It's something you may not be that familiar with yet. I know myself, I love to get out there and jog. I know people tell you all the time, it's hard on your joints, and it is. It is hard on your joints, but I love to jog. And I know a lot of people probably are in the same thing with whatever it is that they love to do. But as you get older, sometimes you start experiencing that joint pain and it becomes kind of a struggle. Well, there are a lot of ways to deal with that. And QC Kinetics, you hear the examples people use on our station all the time, whether it's a jogging or anything else. For the joint pain, they're looking for the right treatment, and QC Kinetics is the right treatment for them. Non-surgical regenerative treatment for joint pain. We're talking about lasting results using natural biologics, no surgery, no pain meds, no steroids, no downtime. So if that sounds appealing to you, check it out and see if you can get going in 2022 the way you want to get going. Get the free second opinion. It's a free call, QC Kinetics, and imagine life in 2022. Moving freely without that joint pain. QC Kinetics can be reached, 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024. One more time, 615-249-4024 for QC Kinetics.
Good stuff from Richard Deitch from The Athletic, as always. You just made the list coming up at high noon. A pair of tickets to see the Predators and the Winnipeg Jets. 6 days from today. That'll be on January 20th at Bridgestone Arena. So that's what's on the line for You Just Made the List at noon. A pair of tickets to see the Predators and the Winnipeg Jets next Thursday at the Stone. But you'll have to call in and participate. Then for pick six in the final hour, it'll be a pair of tickets. The prize for the pick six winner this week will be WWE Friday Night SmackDown.
Ooh.
Which will be a week from today, because that's on a Friday. See, it's called Friday Night SmackDown. So it's a week from today. WWE, that's what's on the line for the pick six winner. So a pair of tickets to that. So two really good prizes. But you'll have to participate.
You must.
You know, I'm just saying. You know, Richard brought up, and I hesitate to even go there, just because I'm sure we're not following it. But Richard just touched on it quickly. I have just kind of bits of it. I haven't done any reading up on it extensively other than I know it's been like a hot topic in the tennis world in Australia. What is – have you guys been – you know, do you know much about this Djokovic thing? I mean, the latest, he's facing deportation and his visa's been revoked again and – it's like, what is all this drama about? Like, I obviously haven't paid close enough attention.
I have no idea.
Okay.
That's what I figured. I have not kept up with that at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Me either. I just basically, you know, headlines, right? So I don't know what's going on. It's just been – I know it's been – I know there's people, like, protesting at the beginning. I mean, it's been nuts. So, anyway, thought I'd at least try. It didn't stick. I was watching Get Up this morning, and they were picking their Super Bowl matchup in L.A. Dan Graziano picked Green Bay and Buffalo.
Okay.
Ryan Clark picked Green Bay and Kansas City.
Okay, so far nothing too outlandish.
Rob Ninkovich, Green Bay, Tennessee. Sam Acho, Green Bay, Tennessee. So, yeah, nothing outlandish. It looks like Green Bay is definitely the favorite on the NFC side of things. But a little bit all over the place. Buffalo, Kansas City, and the Titans. I don't think anybody will pick anybody else. So I don't think that's a surprise, right? So I think it's – and so who would the other – I mean, there's got to be somebody. It cannot be a foregone conclusion, 100%, even though I did pick Green Bay before the season began to get to the Super Bowl. Who would be number two on that list in the NFC?
Well, I picked the Rams. I picked them before the season. I picked them before the season. So I'm going to stick with them. I think the Rams definitely have a shot. But of course, they could lose on Monday.
Today, do you believe
it, though? Monday. Yeah, I think they have the best talent up and down. It's just, can Stafford get it together? If he plays really well, I think they can win the NFC.
I mean, the Rams is probably the safe choice, but you also, I mean, I know they're faced with a lot. You can't rule Brady out. You can never count him out. So I'd probably go with the Bucks. I think I trust, and I'll say this: I think I trust Bruce Arians a tick more than I do McVay, just because of his years and years and years of experience. Now I know McVay has lost a Super Bowl, but and Bruce Arians obviously has one.
You trust Arians over McVay?
I do.
Well, what has Arians done, even though he's been around a long time, until Tom Brady got there?
Well, I mean, he was coach of the year as an interim with Indy, and I believe he got them to the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. He coached Arizona with Carson Palmer, and they were very, very close to
NFC
get into
championship
a Super Bowl.
Game.
Did they get to the NFC? Okay,
they
don't remember them getting to the championship game.
Yeah, okay. And he's been a Hall of Fame coordinator. I mean, for many, many years.
Right. I'm talking about as a head coach. Yeah.
Sure. But, okay. I mean, I don't think that's a bad resume. I mean, yeah, it took Brady to win the Super Bowl, but like, okay.
Well, I'm just saying McVay got Jared Goff to the Super Bowl. Like that to me, like you.
Fair.
Like you get. You get extra marks, extra gold stars for getting Goff to the Super Bowl. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, and did it without Gurley half the year. Gurley got hurt. So that is a fair point.
That wasn't the big year Gurley had?
Well, he got hurt.
He was injured. He was fading down the stretch.
He was fading down the stretch, okay.
That was a big thing. It was like, what's going on? Like, why isn't he playing? Like, he really was losing playing time by the time they got to the playoffs. They were having to manage his carries. And then by the next year, he was gone, right? Didn't they move on from him after that?
Yep.
That was such a boring Super Bowl.
He hasn't been the same since.
It's the same. Does anybody even – I mean, when's the last time you even uttered the words Todd Gurley?
Well, he was with Atlanta last year, but
right,
barely.
Was he?
Yeah,
was
it barely?
Did we ever mention him?
No.
Yeah. Well,
he was on the roster.
I think that was what was happening when they were going to the Super Bowl. Is people were coming to grips with his health is just it's moving in the wrong direction here, and it's not coming back.
Isn't it crazy? David Johnson and Todd Gurley were on top of the running back world, right? They had
I don't
their
think it's
window.
Crazy. I think you look
small.
Through NFL history, there's a ton of examples like
and
that.
And they just,
a bunch
they,
of them.
I mean, they were on top of, they were the standard. Like, remember when David
top
Johnson.
Top pick in the fantasy draft.
Right, would be the top pick in the fantasy draft. Same with Todd Gurley. And now they're completely irrelevant. And
but,
still
yeah,
in league and completely irrelevant.
We could put together a list of 20. It's that whole curse of 370
but that
club.
High? That
oh,
high?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Clinton Portis, Sean Alexander, Jamal Anderson. There's a ton of them. There's a ton of them. Just pull up the list. Curse of 370. They'll all come up there. One after another. Guys you forgot about. Priest Holmes.
Yeah, but that wasn't 370 for those guys, though, was it?
Some of them, a lot of them it was.
I mean, the two we're talking about, Johnson and Gurley?
No.
Like, I remember Michael Turner was the one. You know, he had that big year.
Michael Turner's another.
Never the same. Never the same.
Yeah.
But was Michael Turner on top of the running back world? Like, Gurley and Johnson were number one on everybody's list.
They were close to number one. I don't know about number one, but he was up there.
Okay. All right, we'll come back. We'll head to Indy. Let's get the fallout of the Colts to begin the second hour. Man, Chris Ballard got everybody's attention yesterday with his comments about the quarterback they traded for in Carson Wentz and what happened to them down the stretch. We'll talk to our man Bob Kravitz to begin the second hour of the DDC next.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.